I'm Emily Guy Birkin, and this is Deep Thoughts About Stupid Shit, because pop culture is still culture, and shouldn't you know what's in your head? On today's bonus episode, we are going to be talking about the 1973 classic, The Monster at the End of This Book.
Starring lovable, furry old Grover.
Yes. I'll be sharing my deep thoughts about this classic of the literature with my sister, Tracy Guy Decker, and with you. Let's dive in.
Have you ever had something you love dismissed because it's just pop culture? What others might deem stupid shit, you know matters. You know it's worth talking and thinking about. And so do we. So come overthink with us as we delve into our deep thoughts about stupid shit. This show is a labor of love, but that doesn't make it free to produce. If you enjoy it even half as much as we do, please consider helping to keep us overthinking. You can support us at our Patreon. There's a link in the show notes. Or leave a positive review so others can find us. And of course, share the show with your people.
Okay, so Tracy, I know you know this book. You know I know this book. Share with me what you know about this book and why it is so important to both of us.
So this was the book that we both, my recollection is that we both would demand to hear it for bedtime every night for, I don't know, some unspecified number of years in our childhood. And, you know, for a long time, I think the reason that I loved it was because Dad did the Grover voice.
Oh my God, his Grover voice was phenomenal.
It was spot on. It was spot on. Like, he could have worked for the Muppets. His
voice,
his Grover voice was so good. And I think that I thought that's what I loved about it. And I did love that about it. But I think it was much, much deeper. Because even now, what is this, like 40 years later, 40 plus years later since the first time he read it to us, or when he was reading it to us on the regular. And like, I still am just delighted at the illustrations and the typography and the story. And I know we'll get into the specific story devices, but that direct address of the reader, I still adore it when what I'm consuming breaks the fourth wall. So that's what I mean, I remember as a beloved book from our childhood, but, and I have things that I really am looking forward to talking about with you. Why did you ask that we do this special bonus episode?
So there's a couple of reasons for it. It's a beloved memory for me as well, particularly with Dad's Grover voice, which I have always attempted when reading this with my kids. I actually had a friend over with her kids once, and the kid brought over the book and she read it in her normal voice. I'm like, you're not supposed to do it that way. Was my immediate thought. So that's part of it. But thinking about how subversive in some ways this book is, because it breaks the rules of storytelling in a way that kind of reifies the rules of storytelling. And I think that's part of what I really like about it. I love well-constructed stories. And I love when stories break the expectations. And then I feel like this kind of invites the reader in to be a kind of author as well. And so I think that has something to do with what I like about it. And finally, this gets to something that I actually find very important and kind of my ethical framework for fiction, which is very weird. But that all is embodied in this like adorable, like, what is it, 15-page book that is 50 years old.
Yeah. Let's catch our listeners up, right? So this is a 15-ish page children's book featuring Grover from Sesame Street.
Yes. So, and on the cover, it's got the title. It says The Monster at the End of This Book, starring lovable furry old Grover. I couldn't tell you who wrote this because it's not on the cover. And so Grover from the very beginning starts by saying, hello, everybody, on the cover.
Right, right. With the speech bubble.
Yes, with the speech bubble. So he knows that you're there. Yeah. He is talking directly to you as the reader. And so the first page is the title page. And Grover says, this is a very dull page. What's on the next page? I'm not going to do the voice because it ends up hurting. So, and it's apparently written by John Stone and illustrated by Michael Smolin. So I should know that because they are giants of my childhood.
For real.
So because he skipped the title page and his back was to the title on the cover, he only kind of glimpsed to the title and all of a sudden realized, wait, what did that say? Did it say that there's a monster at the end of this book? Oh my God, I'm scared. And meanwhile, on the pages, there are drawn pages. So it's not just that you're turning pages. There's drawn pages that are getting closer and closer to the end. And so Grover trying to convince the reader, like, hey, don't turn any pages, and then we won't get to the end of this book, and then we won't have to face the monster. And then you turn the page, and you get this overdramatic Grover going, you turn the page! Which Tracy has a t-shirt of.
I do.
So Grover starts trying different strategies to keep from turning pages. So he ties the pages together. And of course, we're able to turn them. And he's very upset about it. Then he tries to nail the pages together with wood. And you turn it. And he says that you're making a terrible mess in addition to getting closer to the monster.
I loved that when I was a kid. And he said, do you know you make a terrible mess? Mm-hmm. I loved it. Mm-hmm.
And then comes Tracy's and my favorite part. He builds a heavy, thick, solid, strong brick wall to keep you from turning pages. And I cannot remember if Dad did this, but when I was reading it to my kids, I would pretend it was hard to open this page. And on the next page, there is a pile of bricks and just Grover's little hand sticking out of it and like a huge speech bubble with a tiny little word. Do you know that you are very strong? Which was my favorite thing.
I loved it so much.
So much. And then at that point, you're almost at the end of the book. It's only one more page. And Grover is pleading, please don't turn the page. You get to the end and like, Grover is the monster at the end of this book. And he, trying to deflect some of his embarrassment, says, you were so scared. I told you there was nothing to be afraid of. And then the coda, my next favorite part, is at the very, very last page, there's Grover with his hands over his head going, I am so embarrassed. Oh, what a delight.
You know, so you recently sent me that essay from the writer who like was like, had this big confession to make. This book mm-hmm. was one of their big influences. Like they usually point people to James Joyce and Franz mm-hmm. Kafka. But I love the point that this writer made, and you'll tell me who it is.
It's David Burr Gerard writing for lithub.com, How a Book About Grover Revealed to Me the Wide World of Literature.
His point is that, yes, James Joyce and Franz Kafka were the direct influences for some of the, for his work. But he wouldn't have appreciated Joyce mm-hmm. and Kafka and their sort of absurdism and the, you know, some of the literary devices if he hadn't read The Monster at the End of This Book as a child, mm-hmm. which is exactly the kind of deep thoughts about stupid shit that we are aiming for. I'm not going to say we achieve it, but we're aiming for it.
That essay is why I wanted to make this bonus episode.
Got it.
Because I was like, this is worth taking a deep dive into.
Well, you know, it got me thinking when you sent that essay along and I'm like reading it on my phone and I'm like, my eyes are getting bigger. And I'm thinking about some of the literary devices that always make me happy, that mm-hmm. all I always find satisfying. And those include dramatic irony, where I know something and the characters don't, mm-hmm. or some of the characters don't. Mm-hmm. Breaking the fourth wall, where the character is talking directly to me as the consumer. Like, these are things that I always enjoy every single time, even when it's a piece of crap pop culture TV show. I'm like, yeah, but it wasn't that bad. It was kind of fun.
So,
and I think it's because of this. I think yeah. it's because of this and Dad's Grover yeah. voice and mm-hmm, like mm-hmm. having that like that delight when he said, do you know that you are very strong? When Grover mm-hmm, said that to mm-hmm. me, because I had just knocked down this brick wall by turning the page.
Yes, yes. So for me, I feel like this book, you know, I was a 3-year-old or you know, like first time I encountered it or even younger, helped me kind of recognize that the act of reading is also an act of creation.
But you're a partner with
yes.
them.
Yes. Mm-hmm. The story doesn't progress if the reader doesn't turn pages. And actually, if we were to do what Grover asked us and stop turning pages, he would be in a horrible situation.
Just terrified.
Just terrified and nowhere to go, you know, mm-hmm. terrified purgatory. And so the essay that we mentioned, the David Burr Gerard essay, he talks about how part of what is delightful to him is that the author and the reader are delighting in Grover's like concern. And I don't think he's wrong, but that brings to mind the way that I read, because I have abandoned many books when something too terrible happens to the characters. And, you know, I don't like abandoning them in that terror purgatory, but at the same time, it's more of a, I refuse to be a party to this.
Mm-hmm. To be the partner with the author and,
yes.
and abusing you.
Yes. Which I know is putting so much
it's more like lending agency, I think, mm-hmm. because they are in fact, I mean, anthropomorphizing implies like you're making something human that isn't, and the characters mm-hmm. are in fact human,
mm-hmm. right? or monsters
in Grover's case. Yeah but there's a level of like agency and mm-hmm. Independent existence mm-hmm. that you are giving them that yeah. is questionable. Mm-hmm.
Well, we talked about this in our last bonus episode a little bit, but I have like an ethos when it comes to the idea of what authors owe to their fictional characters.
Yeah.
And it was created by three very different pieces of artwork. So the first was a short story by David Foster Wallace called, I believe, Incarnations of Burned Children, is I believe what the short story is called. David Foster Wallace came to my college in 2000 or 2001 when I was a senior, and he spoke, he read several pieces. He was brilliant. He also invited anyone who wanted to come to get a drink with him afterwards, and it never even occurred to me to go. And I'm like, not mad at myself, it just didn't occur to me. Like, it's just like, oh, it doesn't really mean me. Anyway, the next day in my fiction writing class, my professor said, I have so much respect for Wallace. He is an incredible writer. That Incarnations of Burned Children story was pornographic. And it was the first time I'd heard pornographic used in that way, because the story is a vignette of a mother and father of a very small child, a little boy who's like, you know, one and a half, able to walk, but not able to talk yet, who gets scalded by boiling water. And it takes them a little while to realize that it is also puddled in his diaper. And the reason why my professor said that it was pornographic is because there was absolutely no reason to put that baby through that. There was no story reason. There was no character reason. There was nothing that made it worthwhile for that to happen. So we were just voyeurs on this horrible moment. And boy, did that stick with me. Fast forward about 7 years, I was back at my alma mater at Kenyon. I was teaching at the creative writing program for students. They showed the movie Stranger Than Fiction that has Will Ferrell in it. And that movie is about Will Ferrell's character, Harold Crick, starts hearing a voice. It's not voices, it's a voice narrating. And he realizes he is a character in, her name is Karen Eiffel, and she's played by Emma Thompson in her novel. He learns all of her novels end in a horrible, tragic death. He ends up being able to contact her. When she learns that he's a real person, she rewrites the ending so that he survives. And I love that movie so much, in part because it takes writing seriously in a way that I don't know. I mean, obviously, screenwriters take writing seriously, things like that. But it's a piece of just for general consumption pop culture that really engages with the idea that there is a great deal of power in writing. And then I love the fact that Eiffel knows that this is a real person. She feels incredible guilt about killing him in a way that is actually like, Harold Crick ends up reading her rough draft. Like, it doesn't become real until she types it. So he reads a rough draft and says, write this. This is a beautiful end to my life.
Yeah, and he actually gives her permission.
Gives her permission because his death ends up because of a number of different things that you know, were unrelated strands come together in one moment where he can save a little boy's life. And she decides to have him like miraculously survive because of one other strand that she's written through, even knowing that this is an important book for her and it's going to, you know, go from being like Pulitzer worthy to okay. And so that, you know, along with the David Foster Wallace moment, kind of gave me this idea that authors owe something to their characters. But I feel like I had a front row seat to this idea because of the monster at the end of this book, because I was willing to go along with this torture of Grover because I knew it was going to be okay. I knew, and so I wasn't being a voyeur. And in fact, I had agency in reading it. So it's not like the incarnations of burned children where we don't have any agency. We're just as helpless as the parents watching this horrible thing happen. And then the final piece of art that kind of created this ethos for me was a Nora Roberts novel.
Tracy here. You know, Emily and I always envisioned bonus episodes being a patron exclusive. So if you want to hear the rest of our conversation and what Nora Roberts taught Emily about what we owe characters, you're going to have to go join us on Patreon. You can find the link in the show notes or visit us at our website, guygirlsmedia.com, to learn how. Thanks for listening. Our theme music is Professor Umlaut by Kevin MacLeod from incompetech.com. Find full music credits in the show notes. Until next time, remember, pop culture is still culture. And shouldn't you know what's in your head?